This is a Past Lives podcast extra episode, and I'm your host Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Past Lives podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday, and I've now released over 100 episodes, and you can find that on almost every podcast app. So in this episode, I'm talking to Elizabeth Bodian about her book, Bigger Pete, Conversations Between Life and Afterlife. Elizabeth is the author of Journeys with Fortune, A Tale of Other Lives, a collection of her past lives experienced while in hypnotic trance. She's also the author of two books of poetry. She holds degrees in cultural anthropology, consciousness studies, religions and poetry, and she has worked as a professor of cultural anthropology. Hi, Elizabeth. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So we're going to be talking about your book. It's called Bigger Pete, Conversations Between Life and Afterlife. And this is about communication that comes through to you using automatic writing.
That's what I call it. I think some other people call it by different names, but that's how I know it.
And so how did this start for you, this automatic writing? Was it something accidental, or did you purposefully sit down and think, I'm going to learn to do this?
Well, some years ago, when I was writing and publishing poetry, I remembered having worked with a hypnotist years ago and to explore past lives. And I began to work with another hypnotist nearby where I live to find out if there was any advantage of being hypnotized in order to write new poems. So that's how I began to do it. And I first started to do it, I would work with the hypnotist, but then I found I could do it myself, hypnotize myself. So I would do that. I would sit down and hypnotize myself and then begin to write with a pencil on a yellow legal pad. And the most important thing seemed to be that I just did not interfere with it at all. Even if what I was writing was strange or weird, I would just keep writing. And I did that many years ago. And so over the time of doing the poetry, what happened was a voice came in who was an American poet, a famous American poet. And he said, if you want to do this, how about we talk about poetry and I can tell you what I know. So he ended up being a teacher for me of poetry, and he asked me to call him by the name Putty, because he said, if you keep calling me my real name when I was alive, I think it will be a little daunting since I was famous. I don't want that to get in the way, so just call me Putty. So he was Putty, and for some years I was writing poetry with his help and learning about poetry with his help through the writing, automatic writing. And then when I started to do, started to write some nonfiction, I continued to do the automatic writing. But when my brother Pete was, who had Down syndrome, contracted Alzheimer's disease, I was told by a medium that people are available to speak to when they have Alzheimer's disease through this kind of trance writing, because they are sort of in limbo between this life and the next. So I thought, oh, wow. So I decided one day as I sat down to do some automatic writing, just to ask if he was available. And I can read you the first few sentences, because I said, Pete, is some part of you here? And he said, sis, I don't want to do this. And I said, okay, never mind. And then I went on to talk to my mother, because I talked to my mother who has passed on, and my father was passed on, and other voices. But that's how I started with Pete. When he began to use language, then he was more eager to do it.
So when you started out doing this automatic writing, was it something you did every day, or was it once a week?
Well, I didn't have a set schedule, but there were times when I would be doing it a lot, several times a day. Sometimes there would be days between. I think probably the longest break between sessions might have been about, I don't know, maybe a week or 10 days. I haven't really tracked it, so I can't say for sure. But I don't do it for a long time. I do it for maybe at max 40, 50 minutes at a time.
Does it take a long time to develop months and years of sitting there doing it every day before it becomes very strong? Or did you find it worked pretty much straight off?
Well, it's sort of both. I mean, I was surprised when I started doing it and was doing it for poetry. And then these voices of people who I knew showed up on the page, like my mother and father. So then I was really intrigued and I would do it more often just because I didn't know what would show up. Once I start a session, I start with do an induction of my own self. I will write things on the paper to go into the session. And as I'm doing that, I'm sort of dropping into that state of mind. And if I have specific questions or people who have passed on I want to talk to, I will mention it. But once I am actually hypnotized, I'm not in total control of my own voice in it. So it's often surprising. And the level of hypnosis seems to differ as well, because when I'm writing with my pencil on the pad, what comes to me to write, and I just write and it just keeps going, it doesn't seem to have any trouble. But sometimes I feel like I'm dropping deeper, because when I come out of a session, there are sections of it that I don't remember writing that I wasn't conscious of when I was writing it. And it's a surprise to me when I come out of a session. Now, over the years I've been doing it, which is, I don't know, probably more than 10 years easily, it has changed somewhat. It's much easier. It just flows more easily. I just can do it. But I really need to be a place where it's quiet and I'm not distracted or there are no interruptions. So it just doesn't break into that sort of trance state.
Do you actually hear something, maybe? I was going to say clairvoyant, but it's clairaudient, is it? Isn't it? Is this like you hear a voice in your mind while it's happening, or it's just your hand moving?
It's just really my hand moving on the page. I think I sort of hear something, but that's not as clear as what's coming onto the page. So I don't see words in my mind. I don't hear words in my mind as clearly as what is just being written with my hand on the page.
Was there a time when you started out, say when Patty, who came through first, where you didn't trust it and you were looking at this thinking, well, am I just making this up?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, I have a great deal of skepticism about it, but somehow it hasn't gotten in the way. And every time that comes up, he said, well, just, you know, you don't have to get rid of the skepticism. Just move it out of the way, put it on the shelf, look at it if you need to, but just don't let it get in the way. So that's what I've tried to do. And even though the skepticism sort of runs alongside my doing it, it doesn't get in the way. I just do it. When it's more shallow, when I feel like I'm just sort of writing without being in a trance, that's when I tend to be more skeptical. But when I drop deep into it and find out when I come out of it that I've actually written all this stuff, that's when I say, oh my gosh, yes, this is happening. So, yeah, the skepticism is there, but I try not to let it get in the way.
Have you ever had information come through that you couldn't possibly have known, but then later it was verified?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I think it's probably one I would like to be able to answer affirmatively, because it would go a long way to addressing the skepticism. But right now, I can't think of anything that would be count as sort of clear factual material. Like I could go and check it out, like some dates or places or something, and then go see if that's correct and find out it was. No, that kind of thing has not happened.
the book's called Bigger Pete. Could you tell us then who is Pete and then who is Bigger Pete?
Yeah. Well, Pete was my brother. He was born 1956, and he was born with Down syndrome, which was something that my parents were not aware of before he was born. So it was a surprise, and they had a different name for him. But once he was born, they decided to call him Peter, and he himself decided he wanted the name Pete, I think because there was some sports person who was named Pete that he liked, and he liked Pete. So he became Pete. So that's Pete, my brother Pete. Now, Bigger Pete came in because as we got into these conversations, as I got into the conversation with my brother, when he was asleep in New Jersey where he lived, and when I was at home in my house in Pennsylvania and in a trance, he was asleep and I was in trance. And that was how the situation when the conversations happened. What happened was as we continued to talk, and this went on for years, I mean, the scope of the book is over 8-year period. So it's not a short thing. It's quite long. And at some point, another voice seemed to come in to talk about what was going on. And in fact, and he said, well, this is the other voice, which said he was Pete, but it didn't sound like my brother Pete. And he explained that he was Pete's higher self. He was Pete, but he wasn't a living Pete. He was sort of in the worlds beyond, and he included other lives that Pete had lived. So we just got to calling him Bigger Pete. Probably a better name would have been Bigger Pete and all the other lives combined, but that's unwieldy. So Bigger Pete was that voice before, while Pete was still living, who was speaking from spirit. And what happened when Pete actually passed on was Pete, the brother that I knew, merged with Bigger Pete. So they were sort of speaking more in a unified voice.
And so it wasn't a thing where you would hear from Pete and that was it. And after he passed on, then Bigger Pete came through. It would kind of change between them while he was still alive.
Yeah. In fact, when Bigger Pete first started talking, I was confused because he would say he was Pete, but I'd say, well, you don't sound like Pete. You don't sound like my brother. And that's when he explained. And actually, let me just see. I could find the page and read just that little bit where he explains. So here's from page 69 of the book. This is what came through. I am Bigger Pete, a useful moniker. I am happy to speak with you anytime, as Pete is. It is not easy to explain how Pete and Bigger Pete fit together, but for now, I am speaking as Bigger Pete, a voice which for you comes to you not from the physical earth, but beyond. Pete, as you know him, as your brother, lives a physical life on earth as you do, but he is part of something bigger that we are calling Bigger Pete. Bigger Pete includes Pete, but also includes other lives, lives between lives, and more. So I am speaking now as Bigger Pete, but I am focusing on Pete. So what I have to say is about Pete, not about other lives than Pete.
While this was going on and Pete was still alive, did he ever mention communicating with you while he was asleep?
No, by the time I was able to speak with him this way when he was asleep, his Alzheimer's had developed, so he was gradually losing the ability to speak, but he was also losing very kind of clear sense of being able to understand or explain things. And when I was talking to him, when I was in trance and he was asleep, I said, "Shall we talk about this when you are awake?" And he said, "No, let's just talk this way when I'm asleep." He said, "I can't do it when I'm awake. I can't do this, and I can't do anything like this now anymore. So let's just talk this way." So he actually addressed that question, and I didn't even try to talk to him. when he was awake about what we were talking about when he was asleep. I wanted to. It felt like there was sort of some sort of dishonesty to be talking when he was asleep like this and not even when he was awake, but that's what he wanted to do. So that's how we carried on.
And it wasn't just Pete and Bigger Pete that you communicate with as well, was it? Your mom and your dad came through as well.
Well, yes, they had come through, and they had come through before, and other voices as well. I've been doing it for so many years, and occasionally if there's somebody that I know of that has passed on, and maybe I've never even met them in life. Like when I started and I was doing poetry, there were poets that I wanted to be in touch with. And I was surprised how many times I would just ask, is so-and-so available to speak? How they were available, but nothing much happened with it. The connection wasn't that strong. But yeah, I have got sort of lists of a lot of people, and I keep thinking of other people that I want to see if they're available. So yeah, there are a lot of other voices besides my brother, my mother, my father. My sister has also passed on. I talk with her, but not very often. So yeah, a lot of voices and spirit.
And also, there's a group in the book that you call unidentified spirits, and that seemed to be a group voice.
Yeah, and that was sort of interesting to me because these other voices would show up on my page as I'd be writing, and I'd say, who is it that's speaking? And one time they explained it as, well, we are in spirit, and sometimes you ask a question, and we want to come to answer your question, but sometimes it's not an individual spirit. It might be several spirits, and the reason we're coming together is simply to help you understand what you're asking about. But we don't need names ourselves. We don't really have names and don't use names in the way you do. And so we're just trying to address your question. So I just had to refer to them as unidentified spirits. And they're not hugely significant in the book, but they do come in now and then. And I've included what they've said.
And if we could talk about Putty for just a little bit, he seemed to be a kind of like a gatekeeper in a way, that he would open a gate for you to allow the communication to happen. And is it also like he's a kind of a protector because he can control the gate and stop people coming through who might not be good for you?
That's exactly right. When he first came in, as I said, he was a poet, famous poet. But what he wanted to do was just serve as a gatekeeper to, as you were saying, if there were other voices that came in that were not good voices, that weren't, not that I would want to speak with, or had some sort of negativity about them, he would be able to stop that communication from happening. So he was like a gatekeeper. But when I stopped doing the poetry and I was doing the different kinds of writing, nonfiction writing and so forth, I said to him, do you still want to be a gatekeeper if I'm not doing the poetry? And he said, oh, what's going on with you? What comes through is so interesting. Yes, please. I would like to continue doing this. So he has. He's just continued to be the first voice. And I've asked if I ever just sit down to write, and he's not available. He said, that would be rare, but if it is, you know, like there will be a voice that just says, try later. And that's only happened once or twice.
That's interesting. It almost sounds like there's a receptionist at a desk, and you say, sorry, Putty's in a meeting at the moment. Can you call back later?
Well, it sort of felt like that, but I don't know what is going on. I mean, I can often ask questions about what's going on wherever these voices are coming from. And sometimes they try to explain, but sometimes they say it will be hard for you to understand if we do explain. So they say what they can and try to answer questions. I mean, I've never felt with any of the voices that there was a reluctance other than, you know, just the not strong connection of one sort or another.
Hello, listeners. This is Simon. Now, as some of you know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyse what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session, or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. And this thing of Pete or Bigger Pete trying to explain what it was like for them in the afterlife, they seem to say that sort of phrase often where it was, well, we could try and explain it to you, but you might not quite get it because it's so different here.
Right. And I still, even though the book finished, you know, a few years ago, I continued to talk with Pete. When he first went into the afterlife, he was very busy understanding what was going on and doing what they call the life review and understanding just what it all meant, where he was. But now he's much more available and continues to want to talk. So, you know, I just did a session this morning and talked to him. And I told him that I was going to be speaking with you about the book. He, by the way, wanted me to write the book. He insisted. He said, "Sis, you have to write this. You have to make a book and you have to let people know." So it was largely his impetus for the book itself. But he would try to say, he'll try to describe sometimes what's going on. And he says, "Sis, you know, you won't understand. I don't have a body. I'm not seeing and hearing and stuff the way you do. You know, I can sort of see you now as I talk to you," because he does. He'll say, "I'm right around you." He said, "You can't see me, but I'm near you as I speak to you. But I can move easily. You know, it's just, there's much that I couldn't possibly explain how it works to you. I don't understand how it works myself. It just is different."
Have you found that over time, the Pete that you knew as your brother in life has kind of disappeared in a way and become more Bigger Pete and Bigger Pete's viewpoint?
Well, it's an excellent question, and I wasn't thinking ahead of time that that might happen. One of the things is that Pete was born with Down syndrome, which he did not want to acknowledge his whole life. It was near the end of his life, one of the last conversations I had with him while he was still living about that. And he said he didn't. That was another issue. But he also then later in life got Alzheimer's. But when he passed into the afterlife, he didn't have any more Down syndrome. He didn't have any more Alzheimer's. And so he immediately started to sound a little different from the Pete that I knew, because he could explain things very well, and his language and his vocabulary was different. And I mean, I could recognize him, and he was always bro, and I was always sis, and what he had to say and what he remembered and so forth. I mean, it was clearly him, but he just didn't have the impediments of Alzheimer's disease and Down syndrome. Well, I said, but he was still recognizable. He was still my brother, I would say, you know, "So do I call you bro or what now?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, you might as well call me bro."
You mentioned a couple of times that Pete, when he was alive, he would see puppets and that sometimes they would keep him awake.
Right. Well, this happened, I think, when he, it seemed to coincide roughly with the onset of Alzheimer's. And he talked to puppets. He would see puppets around him. They were in his room, and he would talk to them. And if I was in the car with him, he never drove or learned to drive, but I'd be driving, he'd sit in the passenger seat, and they'd be down by his feet on the floor. And he'd say, "They're right here." And I say, "Well, I can't see them, bro." And he says, "Yeah, I can see them." So the puppets seemed to be companions for him. And I didn't realize until he passed on how very, very lonely he was in his life. He was very lonely, I think. And he was always trying to be sociable and so forth. But I think the loneliness and the Alzheimer's probably had something to do with why the puppets showed up. He didn't talk about them to people unless he was really trusted somebody, because I think he realized that other people couldn't see the puppets. But he said there were a number of them. He said there was one when he was in a wheelchair near the end of his life, would ride on the wheelchair with him, and they would whisper, and he described their language when they would talk to each other. And he said it would sound like music. He didn't always understand it. And they didn't really talk with him in the same way that he talked, but he could understand them, and they were company, and they were with him. But later on, I asked about the puppets, if, you know, the puppets were still around. That was when he passed on. He said, no puppets here.
And so he didn't mention if maybe they were some kind of spiritual beings, or it was more that it was his way of dealing with loneliness.
Well, I was guessing it was his way of dealing with loneliness. He didn't say that, but they seemed to coincide with when he was more on his own because of the development of Alzheimer's. It seemed to be around that time. I haven't pinpointed it exactly. But, you know, sometimes they would be bothersome. And so I made for him a sign for his door, his bedroom. And on one side of the sign, it said, "Hello, puppets, come on in, let's talk." And the other side of the sign said, "Not right now, puppets, please come back later." So I said, "This can give you control a little bit about when the puppets come and you don't want to talk to the puppets." And he was very glad for that, and he used the sign.
Now, there's a sentence that I made a note of here in the book. It says, "This is Pete flying about, traveling to strange and wonderful places." Did you ever find out what these strange and wonderful places were?
Oh, I think that was before he passed on, and he was in between life and afterlife, and he was visiting the afterlife. And other voices said, yes, he's come back and forth quite a bit. And he didn't really say details about the places. He was able to move easily. To me, it sounded sort of like the way people talk about dreaming and being able to move easily in dreams. But I think the reason that he liked that so much near the end of his life was because he was physically incapacitated. He was in the wheelchair. And one of the first things that happened when he passed on, he was saying about his legs working. I said, "You have legs?" And he said, "Well, not really legs, like you know them, but I don't have problems with legs anymore." Yeah. So I think it was in that part where he was talking about moving about freely. I think it was the fact of being able to move, the feeling of being able to move, which was such a pleasure for him.
And it makes you wonder if there's lots of people out there with Alzheimer's and perhaps other conditions who are coming and going from their body and visiting the afterlife. It's almost like getting used to the afterlife before you actually go there.
That's what it felt like to me. And there would be times when I'd be sitting with him and I would look at him and he had sort of a blank look. I mean, he would be staring at me, but a blank look as if he was off somewhere else. And I think we've all seen people with blank looks from time to time for whatever reason, not Alzheimer's, but other things as well. They're just thinking about something else. But I wonder sometimes if that was, you know, at that point, he was also, you know, doing sort of visitations of the afterlife or something like that. He might have been, maybe he wasn't. It was just my guessing at that point. Because if I would ask him, you know, he was not available. He was just staring. But yeah, there was a lot of back and forth before he actually passed on. And he talked about that. And sometimes I would ask about whether he could see me as he was talking to me. And that was vague, but he would say he had sort of a sense of me. And maybe sometimes I'd sort of quiz him, like, you know, if he was, well, actually, this was the afterlife. I'd say, can you see me right now? He says, yeah, you're sitting, you're wearing flowers or something. And I had a flowered nightgown on or something like that. So I wasn't fully aware of what was accessible to him and what not. And before he passed on, some of that was, but it wasn't the same as when he actually passed on.
And when he did pass on, he didn't come through straight away, did he? How long was it before he came through?
I think it was about 4 or 5 months, because he passed on in the summer, and it was in the fall. And spring he passed on, April. And then I think it was around September, October, when he showed up on the page again. And all of it is just, when I say about showed up, I mean, all of this is just in the writing. It's just the conversation, the descriptions, everything else is just what shows up on the page in the writing. So one day I was doing a session, and on the page came, "Sis, are you there?" And I said, "Bro." I was so surprised and delighted. And he said he'd been trying to figure out how to do it, but he didn't know how to do it from where he was. So he had to ask my mother and father, how is it you can do the talking, you know, with Elizabeth? And so he showed up, and since then, no problem.
It's almost a thing, well, for me, is you think, well, the spirits know what they're doing. They could just, if they want to communicate, they just do it. You don't think that on their side, it might be tricky for them and they have to work out how to do it.
Well, I can't generalize from his experience. I mean, I know what he tells me and I try to make sense of it the best I can, but I think before he passed on, he knew he was going to be leaving. He knew he was going to be dying and he was finishing his life, but he said he wanted to keep talking. And I said, well, I do too. I would like that very much. But I can't tell you what to do then. I don't know how to tell you what to do, and you'll have to figure out how to do it from your side, but I'll be here. I will put myself into a trance. I will get my paper and pencil, and I'd be happy to talk to you anytime, but you'll have to figure out from there how to do it. I can't tell you.
And didn't they say that when he first passed over, there was a big welcoming party?
Oh yeah. Yeah. He had a lot of people welcoming, and they said, and I think there were several things that sort of kept him busy at the beginning. One was the welcoming party and seeing people who were welcoming, people he knew, people he didn't know. And then there was also the life review, which I've heard about from other people as well, just going over the life and trying to make sense of it. And I think for him, part of the problem was he was also experiencing himself without Down syndrome, without Alzheimer's, and trying then to understand things with his sort of new to him way of looking at it and understanding it. And that took some time, all of that. The welcoming party, I guess, came and went, but the sort of getting used to where he was and understanding where he was and so forth, because I would ask for him and they'd say, well, he's very busy, he can't talk now. But he came through eventually, and he'd said when he did, he said, I was just so busy, sis. You know, there's a lot to, this is different. It took a lot of getting used to.
Wasn't there a time where, was it you awoke one morning and then you got a name that you hadn't heard of before and you had to check it out and find out who she was?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was actually, right. She was a medium, and I didn't know that, but I got this full name, and I actually looked up online on the computer, and I found out that this woman was a medium, and I was able to contact her in real life, not through the writing, but in real life, and she was a living, breathing medium, and I asked if I could have a session with her, which I did.
Did Pete come through, or your mom and dad?
I'd have to go back and sort of look at that. There are a number of mediums that I'm familiar with, and because they have their own way of access, you know, like we've had lots of conversations, but they have their own way of doing it. And I don't know anybody that does sort of the automatic writing in trance the way I do it. It sort of came about as I described in the beginning. But yeah, I did contact her and did a session with her, and it was, I just, right now, I can't remember the details of it.
Do you do this for people? Is this a service where people will contact you and say, I want to hear from such and such, and then you do it for them?
Well, I haven't done it till now. A couple people have asked, and a good friend of mine from the college where I taught lost her son, and I don't think she asked me first. I think he came through to me in one session. And I was wondering, she was in such grief about having lost him. And I wasn't sure if whether this would be a good thing or a not good thing for her. So I didn't mention it right away, but I eventually did when it seemed like a better idea. And so that was sort of involuntary on my part, but I don't offer it to other people because I haven't tried it. Let me say that. So I'm not sure, but up until this point, I've just been doing it as a solitary thing.
Well, okay. So if we can talk about Pete and his life, was there a conversation you had with him about choosing to have this life, that he chose that he would have Down syndrome and that he would be with your family and be with you?
Well, that was something I was very interested in. And when he first passed on and when I was able to talk with him, I asked him about that. And he said, "Sis, I am trying to learn about that. I can't tell you. When I find out about it, I'll tell you. I know you want to know." And He didn't address it quite in that way, and he hasn't quite given a full answer to it, which I'm still very eager to hear. But one of the things that he did say and was, I was asking about, were there specific lessons that he would be able to learn if he was born the way he was, where he was, and so forth. And he said, the lessons weren't always just about me. Some of the lessons of my life were about for other people around me. So that was something he did say, and I found that very interesting.
Yeah, I suppose we're all learning, aren't we? And you might have had an agreement with him before you were both born, how your relationship would be and what you could learn from having a brother like this.
Yes.
But does he talk much about reincarnation and other lives?
No, he has said that he has been learning about other lives. And I actually did, it was some years ago, I was doing a session with a medium where a medium picked up a life that he and I had had before. And it was pretty sketchy. There weren't a lot of details, but the interesting thing to me was it was almost a little bit reversed because I seemed to have had some sort of impediment in that life and had a very solitary life, sort of cloistered. But part of that was because I couldn't really function in the world at large. And he was a woman. So but we were very close in that life and he was a help to me in that life. But the details of it, I don't feel that confident about. It was sort of sketchy. But Pete has said since he passed on that there have been a number of lives we've shared together. And I haven't heard details about that. I don't know if he'll tell me more later. I mean, I'm still talking to him. And I just don't have as much control, even if I have a question when I go into a session. That doesn't mean I'm going to get any answer, because once I'm in the session, I don't have control over what. Can't keep saying, well, what about my question? Or what about my question? Or what about my question?
Yeah.
Sort of that way. It's just, you know, once I'm in the session, I just have to relinquish my conscious control and let what happens happen.
And so have you built up an understanding of where Pete is from all the communications you've had of what the afterlife is like, what we'll all see when we get there?
Well, I'd have to say, in fact, I asked Pete, I did a session this morning with him, and I said, I asked him three questions. He said, okay, question sis. He always calls me question sis because I ask him all these questions. Okay, question sis, what are your three questions? And I said, the first question was, what would you like me not to say as I talk about you in the book? Because actually that happened another time. And he said, oh, I can't think of anything. If there's something you start to say that I don't like, I will let you know. Because he broke into us something else before. But I said, okay, is there anything you want me to say? He says, yes. Tell anybody who wants to hear it to remember the love. It's all about the love. And whenever I've asked him what's most important about where he is and what people can learn from where he is, that's what he always says. He says, the love is the most important.
And I suppose when you get there, there may be specialists who would look after you when you just arrive. I always imagine there's different teams there. And, you know, when you just arrive, there's the onboarding team who give you the lowdown and take some details from you. And then you're passed on to the next team who work with you more.
Well, that's, I haven't heard that, but there's no reason why that can't be the case. I mean, if that's what you've learned, I mean, to me, I'm fascinated by it. And I've also, all the way along, I just realized that whatever I come to know is going to be probably very small compared to all there is to know. In fact, I should say, one of the things that's been happening more recently in my trance writing, and this is not about Pete, but it didn't happen at the beginning when I started it more than 10 years ago. And that is occasionally I will hear a voice come in on the, I don't hear it, but it comes on the paper. And I'll say, you know, who is speaking and where are you from or whatever. And there have been some voices that say they're not from our solar system. And that's just floored me. I don't know what's going on there. And it's been so, it's unusual. And I don't know, but there's just, in other words, what I'm trying to say is there's just so much that is unknown compared to the little bit we do know. So when I get to learn a little tidbit here, a tidbit there, I'm very happy, but it seems like such a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Pete's experience is his. I mean, I do talk to some other people who've passed on, but as I say, you know, once I'm in trance, I don't have total control over the conversation. Sounds pretty much like it in the writing, but I don't really when I'm doing it. And so other people, I've really, my contact and what I know of what Pete has experienced is from him and my mother and father and some other voices. But I think if there were a whole slew of people doing this and learning about the afterlife, we'd have a huge amount of information that I don't have a clue about and might even be counter to what my experience is or what I've heard about.
Yeah, I feel it's, whatever happens, it's a lot more complicated and a lot stranger than we imagine it could be. And have you had contact with, or has anybody that comes through mentioned other kind of spiritual beings, maybe angels or spirit guides?
Guides, yes, but not so much in connection with Pete directly, but in other sort of contacts I've had through the writing with spirit world. Angels, no, I haven't really asked for a lot of information. And when I do a session, as I said, I will do the induction. And if there's anything that I'm really wanting to learn about or any being or spirit or deceased person that I would like to have contact, I'll ask. Doesn't always mean the answer will come. I mean, it seems like anybody who shows up on the page to talk to me is very helpful. It's just that I don't know when I go into a session with a particular question whether there will be answers forthcoming or not. I just take what comes.
And there was another sentence in the book where they said the lines between one person and another in spirit are more fluid, almost like Bigger Pete kind of would interact with someone else, but they would blend in some way.
This morning when I session, I was asking Pete, what else might be interesting for people to know about where you are in the afterlife? And he said, well, I think one of the things that he learned was that his own thinking is not so separate from the thinking or of other beings or other people that are there. In other words, there's a lot more sharing of information and experience, and it's not considered stealing. In fact, those were his words. It's not thought of as stealing. It's thought of as sharing. So there's a fuzzier line between what is your own and what is somebody else's, is the way he described it. So he says, when I tell you things, sometimes this is, if I could divide it up, this is me telling you. Sometimes I'm borrowing from somebody else, and sometimes I can't see that line so easily that sort of the answer comes through me to answer your question, but it's not really something that I knew beforehand. So he's tried to explain it a little bit as best as he can, and I think he does pretty well, but he says, some of it, I don't think you'll just understand this until you come. And whenever he says that, he says, I don't mean this now. You have more life. Not right now, but when you come, you'll see.
Does he ever talk about meeting other people over there? Maybe your grandfather or great-grandfather or others?
Well, I haven't asked, but he did. My mother and father are there, and my sister, and yes, they're there. And sometimes I don't know what kind of contact they have and how that contact is, but sometimes I don't hear something from him, and I'll ask my mother, you know, how's Pete? And especially when he first passed over, I said, I'm really eager to hear from Pete. And she said, he's fine. Don't worry about him. He's fine. He's busy. He'll talk to you. You'll hear from him when he can talk to you. He's not forgotten you. He's very grateful for all you've done. You helped him all through the transition. No, he's going to want to talk to you. It's just he's doing so much right now. He'll hear from him. Don't worry. So there are others, yeah, but sometimes there are voices that come in unbidden and may identify themselves. But generally, if there's somebody who lived on Earth who I knew and has passed on, I need to ask for them more than... There's only been a couple times when somebody has come in, I said, who is this? And one time not too long ago, somebody said, oh, I was talking to your mother about this writing you do and how you do it. I just wanted to try it. So I was trying to contact you. That was all. And that person just wanted to do it. And that was it. There was nothing further. They just were curious. So that came through. And I don't know who that person was, but somebody that she talked to. So I never know what's going to happen. I mean, that was a surprise. And that's, I think, the only time that happened in that way.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what things come up that surprise you? Because if you do it so much, you get used to it, don't you? But I was thinking every now and then something might just spring up and you think, whoa, where did that come from?
Well, exactly. I mean, that's part of the draw of doing it is because, you know, sometimes it feels more mundane. You know, I'll go into a session and I'll say, Pete, are you there? Bro, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fine, sis. How are you doing? I'm fine. Nothing so dramatic. But occasionally there'll be something, and I don't know when it's going to come, that is a surprise. Either a voice that I, you know, like don't know or says something unusual. But part of, I mean, that is sort of the draw of doing it is because I don't know what's going to show up. And it's sometimes it's more mundane, but sometimes it's surprising and interesting. And I think part of it is, I think if I had all the good questions to ask, and that's part of it going into it, like how, what can I ask for, or who can I ask for that I could learn more about this, that, or the other thing? And I do that when I think about it. It's not neat and tidy and doesn't always work so methodically and predictably.
And you haven't had your own higher self come through?
Not in the same way that the bigger Pete came through, no.
And I suppose there's a thing there where you have to trust it in a way, because, you know, it's difficult to just make that stuff up, particularly if you're in a trance and your hand's just writing. It would be so bizarre if this was just all your mind, wouldn't it?
Well, somebody just wrote a review of the Bigger Pete book, and, you know, they said either Pete readers will believe what you're writing or they will think you're making it all up. But, you know, if I could make all that stuff up, I'd say I was a little more clever than I think I am. There's a consistency and there's a tone to it. And I mean, I'm skeptical. I continue to be skeptical. And I think there's actually some places where if I'm coming in or out of a session, I'm not deeply into it, where my own mind, I don't think it's affecting making up stuff, but I feel less convinced of its own truth outside of myself. But when I'm really in deeply into a session, I will take what comes. And I think the doubt, as that one voice long ago said, you know, it'll get in the way. So you don't have to get rid of it. Just put it out of the way. And I think that's the thing. If I go into a session and I'm ready to hear anything from anyone about anything, it comes. But if I start to doubt or think I know or want to interfere or something, then it doesn't work as well.
Do you find that Bigger Pete, he said that he includes Pete, but also other lives, lives between lives and more. Does he come across as being particularly wise and knowledgeable?
Oh, yeah. In fact, that's why when I first heard that voice show up on the page, why I was going, wait a minute, this didn't sound like it. You know, I said, listen to you. I mean, you're, what's going on here? No, it was very wise, very kind, very loving, but very, very different. It didn't sound like my brother. But when he explained, then that makes sense.
Do you ever get the impression that you might ask something and their reply is kind of, well, I could tell you, but now would not be the right time?
Not so much about how things work or what it's like or anything like that. Sometimes it's just more a mechanical thing. Like, I think sometimes I may be distracted and they have a sense of that I'm not totally with it. Maybe I'm thinking about something else at the same time I'm doing it. And they might say, why don't you call us again at night? And so it's more like that. It's like, this may not be the best time for that conversation, but it's not really, I think the fault is sort of on my end. I'm distracted or I'm not in the best place to do a session.
And when you do the sessions and you finish them, do you find it to be particularly draining and you're very tired at the end of it?
No, it's almost always so interesting. And they seem to have their own length. And sometimes if I ask, for example, for a number of voices, I don't know if they'll all show up. But sometimes if I have like little conversations with a lot of voices, and it might go on for a time, and then it's like, I wouldn't say exhausting, but it's like, wow, that was something. And other times it seems lighter. I mean, they're not exactly the same every time. I may talk to Pete for a long time, but he's so familiar. But an unfamiliar voice, it seems like a little bit more work to understand what they're saying. Not that the writing is unclear. It's just I'm not quite sure what they're talking about or why they're saying that. But I'll write it anyway, try to work it out later.
And have you found that you have things happening when you're away from the page? Maybe there are signs that you see something, you think, hang on a second, is Pete doing that? Did he put that there for me to see it? Or, you know, maybe just other things coming up?
Well, I can't be sure because the automatic writing is something I've done for so long that I'm, in spite of the skepticism, more clear about what's coming through. And I'm not, I don't think of myself as that available to that kind of sign or communication or whatever. Occasionally, yes. And occasionally there have been a couple things where then when I do a session, I'll ask about it. But sometimes I'll have not from Pete, but from other voices just saying, well, we'll do what we can to help you with that. But one of the things that has come through several times is that whatever spirits are in the spirit world, whether they have lived lives and have passed on or have never lived lives but are there, what influence they have, what kind of control do they have about what's going on with our lives on Earth? And what I get mostly is that there's, you know, there are physical things that are purely physical are a little more out of bounds and not quite so manageable from the world of spirit. And that seems a little vague, but I think for example, if I said, can you make such and such happen in my world? You know, I think they would probably say, well, we're not in your world and we're not, you know, the rules are different. I just get that they're not completely separate by a long shot, but there's what goes on in this world and may not be so manageable. On the other hand, it could be that's just my experience and people that mediums or other people that have that experience, I don't doubt that that may happen for them. It just doesn't so much for me.
So do you have plans to do another book?
Well, I've sort of been hearing from what does come on the page that this isn't the end. I mean, the Pete book was a couple of years now since the end of that book. And I've been talking a lot to him and he's changed. And people have asked and said, well, are you going to be able to write about what Pete is telling you now? How are you going to do more? So I've heard of a few people that have read the book that just are hoping for like a sequel, but I've been trying to collect. One of the things I've been doing these days is trying to collect just the conversations with Pete that have happened since the book. So I can see really when I put them all together, what's there and so forth. But I certainly don't have it clearly in mind. I think it's at this point a possibility. That's all.
We've been talking about the book. It's called Bigger Pete, Conversations Between Life and Afterlife. And people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
And other places too, yes.
And can you tell us about your other books?
Well, when I started writing to publish, I was doing the poetry years ago. And so there are two full-length poetry books. One poetry book is entirely tanka poetry, borrowed from the Japanese form, the five-line tanka poem. And what I did, I was doing a lot of tanka writing. And finally, what I did is I put a book together that it's like a book that goes from morning to night. So the first poems are from the morning and then late morning and noon and afternoon, then goes on to the evening. That's one poetry book. Another poetry book came out of some of the poems were written when I was doing a master's degree in poetry. And so that's another one, Blood Metals, but that's another full length. And then there are a number of shorter, I think four poetry chapbooks, all different publishers. But when I started doing this kind of writing, I found that it was not compatible. I couldn't seem to manage to do the poetry and this kind of writing as well. They're different kinds of writing. So the last book, which you and I talked about a few years ago, was Journeys with Fortune, A Tale of Other Lives, which came out of the past life work I did. And it was each chapter was a different life. So that sort of shifted into this. And then there's the Pete book. So it's a few other books, yeah.
Well, it's been great talking to you. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Well, it's a delight, Simon. I'm glad we could do this. I certainly enjoyed it. Thank you.
And that was an interview with Elizabeth Bodian about her book, Bigger Pete, Conversations Between Life and Afterlife. And a great way to support this podcast is to sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. For $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday. You can find that on almost every podcast app. And I now have a selection of t-shirts available for Past Lives Podcast t-shirts and Alien UFO Podcast t-shirts. There's also hoodies and mugs and stickers. But just go to the t-shirts tab on my homepage, which is at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And look out for the Past Lives Podcast episodes called Paranormal Stories that are released every Thursday. And the Past Lives Podcast has a Facebook group. And if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you want to find the links for the book and my homepage, they are in the show notes. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.